So before we start, I'm going to say the set aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your new truth, on your truth, see new truth. God, help me carry your message tonight. Amen. Okay. It's good to see everybody. It's good to see Matt. It's good to see Jeremy. And Matt's a dad now, right?
I am.
Let's give him a hand.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, tonight on Sunday night, we've finished We Agnostics, and we're going to start How It Works. And we're going to go through this chapter, which is steps 3 and 4, and then into action steps 4 through 11. Then working through others, and then finish to 164 on Sunday night. How It Works is read at a lot of meetings. It's in the book. We read it here out of the book, so everybody knows it's in the book. At a lot of meetings, they have it on a card, and people read it. And that's not good or bad. It's just that new people need to know it's part of the book. And it's page 58, which means there's a lot of work that needs to be done to get to How It Works. And they cover 57 pages and the doctor's opinion to convince us of three things. We're an alcoholic and cannot manage our own lives. No human power can relieve me of this, and God can and will if he is sought. And then we're ready to go to How It Works. Now, we just finished We Agnostics, which covers where God is, that he's deep down inside of all of us, and we block him out by worship of other things. Does that sound familiar? It's true, isn't it? And we're now going to allow God to work in our lives, and how it works is how we let this power work in our lives for the people who are powerless. Now, it started getting read at meetings in the early 40s in California. Somebody started a meeting, I think it was in Palm Springs. Eventually it moved to Los Angeles, and they didn't know how to start the meeting, and one of the guys said, well, let's read How It Works. And then that became kind of a thing that's done at most meetings. This chapter was written, these three pages, I call it the How It Works preamble that we read at every meeting. We'll probably spend several weeks on it. There's so much in here. This was written at night by Bill Wilson. He had gotten to this point of the book, and he wanted Reverend Shoemaker to write the steps and write the instructions. Reverend Shoemaker said it has to be written by an alcoholic. He was the head of the Calvary Church, where you remember Roland Hazard went when he left Dr. Young to find a spiritual experience, and that's where Abby Thatcher was when he went to see Bill W. And you can get a book, Reverend Shoemaker and the Big Book. And you can buy it on Amazon. It's really good. It's all of his works and how things in the Big Book came from a lot of the stuff that he wrote and preached. So Bill W. said that he didn't know what to write. You can listen to him tell the story on the internet. I've listened to it. He said around 11:30 at night, he didn't know how to begin. So he worked late at night. He prayed. He put the pen down, he said, and he prayed. And he asked God how he was going to put this all together. And then he said, suddenly he just grabbed the pen and he wrote these three pages. And when he was done, he counted the steps and he realized he had 12 steps. And so it wasn't like Bill W. had been thinking for days on how to write this. This was inspired, I believe, revealed by God. It was given to him after prayer and it was put together. And so we have this How It Works, How I Find the Power to Live. Now, if you go to page, on the page before, 57, the Big Book always has a pattern of telling you one thing and then going, following it up. So it says at the end of We Agnostics, when we draw near to him, he disclosed himself to us. So how does it work? How do we draw him near to us so he can disclose ourselves to us, or to disclose himself to me? And this is how it works, how we do it. And it starts with rarely. And a lot of people have wondered, should we have put rarely in? And Bill W. said, well, he wouldn't put rarely in now, but that's not true. And rarely, I think, comes because they had the four absolutes of the Oxford group. They had absolute purity, unselfishness, honesty, and love. Those were the four absolutes of the Oxford group that had the six steps. And they felt that we shouldn't have absolutes in AA. Alcoholics just can't handle absolutes. And so they started with rarely. I think rarely is fine. I think it says it all, because rarely is rarely. And how rare is rarely? You see, it could be very, very rare. But rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Now, something came out to me that tonight when I read it, it says, well, who actually fails? You see, it's the person. It's not the program. It's not AA. It's not God. It's the person fails who has thoroughly followed our path. Now, it's their path. And they talk about in the introduction to the foreword to the first edition, the first words they wrote was that they had recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body, 100 men and women. It wrote, how we recovered is the purpose of this book. We have written precise directions on how we did that. So that's the whole purpose. The path is the precise directions on what they did. Now, so there's a lot in here, because you won't fail if you follow their path. Now, their path has to be 100% their path. You can't add your path to their path. You won't have their path. And so they're telling you, it's a pretty powerful line when you actually look at it carefully. Are you thoroughly following their path? And I think what happens is we follow their path for a while, and then we get ideas, and we get our own ideas, and then we sort of dwindle off, and then before you know it, we're on a whole path that's not related to this, and then we're in trouble. And I think that's what happens. Now, we don't want to get off the path today. If you've been in here a while, 10 and 11 is how you stay on the path. And it says on page 100, you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. We must continue to do it, and we do it together. And that's one of the powers of meetings, is we're all here together trying to find the path. And it starts with those who do not recover. It's just like Norm Saver, page 25. It says, who doesn't want it? Who would be willing? Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of pride, the confession of shortcomings. It starts out with like a negative. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. So there are people who cannot or will not do this. And they tell you who they are. So you might ask yourself, am I a cannot or a will not? It says usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. So they're telling you that you can recover if you will give yourself completely to the simple program. But there are people who cannot do it. They're incapable of being honest with themselves. And what are they incapable of being honest with themselves about? What? What is it that they can't see? And what does constitutionally mean? You want to look that up in that book. And so I have some thoughts on this. It says on page 44, that to die an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not easy alternatives to face. You've heard that before, right? well, how can it not be an easy alternative to face? You're either going to die an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis. Well, I think what they're saying is if you can see that there's two doors, they're easy alternatives to face. But if you can't see that you only have two choices, then you can't face that. And if you can't face that there are two choices, then you're not going to do the simple program. You're not going to do it. Constitutionally writes, by their basic nature, in agreement with the essential nature of a person. Now on page 25, it says about these people who cannot or will not do that. When they're talking about there's a solution, it says, we saw that this really worked in others. Can you see that today? That there's something working in this room, right? And it says, we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we've been living it. Now, was your life hopeless and futile when you came in here? Could you see that? And it says, when therefore we were approached by those with whom the problem has been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the spiritual kit of tools laid at our feet. So I think one of the definitions of constitutionally incapable of being honest with itself is that you can't see the hopelessness and futility of your life as you're living it. You can't see the truth of how bad it is. And I heard, I looked up Sandy Beach and he said, the first step really tells you you're worse than you think. I like that. You're worse than you think you were. And I think that's true. So if you can't see that you have a hopeless condition of mind and body, then you won't do this. You won't take these steps. And then the other thing about that is, in doctor's opinion, it says we can't see the truth from the false. And our alcoholic life seems normal. And we can't see the truth about it. Now, I believe that when you get when you hit bottom, you can see the honesty about yourself. You can see the truth about your situation. I think to me that's what hitting bottom is. It's not a circumstance, it's being able to see the truth about the hopeless condition of mind and body. And I think that comes from God. I think we get that moment when we see it. Anthony, we'll talk about that maybe when we open up. And you can see the truth, that's a gift. And then what you do with that is up to you. But there's that moment of complete defeat when you can't fight anymore. And you say, I'm done, I give up. And you are surrendered, but you give up, you stop fighting. And so there are such unfortunates, they are not at fault, they seem to have been born that way. And then I wrote, they just can't take the first step. They can't admit that their life is unmanageable. And then I wrote, they can't admit to yourself the truth of your situation. And so there's a lot in those few lines. If you've worked with a lot of new people and you can see they start to drift away, they don't follow up, that's what they're talking about. They were defeated, they come here, they're done, their lives are a mess. But then they seem to drift away. And it says they are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. And so what do you need to be honest about yourself when you come here? Do you have to drive the speed limit? Are they talking about that? To me, they're talking about honest about my thinking, about my motives, my old ideas, my powerlessness. And I have to continue to always be honest about those things. And it says, on step 10, we continue to take searching, and we continue to take personal inventory, and whenever we're wrong, we admit our mistakes. I have to look for my mistakes rigorously. I have to searching and fearless moral inventory. Isn't that what that is? We want to be honest about the truth of our thinking and the truth of our situation, and that requires humility, and it requires a relationship with God. And we want to live that way. We don't want to live the way we were living before, where we lived on lies. And the beginning of that is step 4 through 9 in living in 10 and 11. That's the manner of living that makes you rigorously honest. It's a process. It says their chances are less than average. There are those who suffer from grave mental and emotional disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. And so again, they're asking, notice honesty is in here three times. And what do they have the capacity to be honest about? What? About the truth of their situation, about their hopeless condition of mind and body, about their powerlessness, about their thinking, and they have to be humbled by it to want to seek God. So there's really, the only person that keeps you, cannot or will not do this, is the person who can't see the truth, who isn't willing to admit complete defeat and see their situation for what it is. And I think that's a gift. And why do so few people come here? They can't see the hopelessness and futility of their situation enough to be able to surrender to it. They still think it's somehow it's not that bad. So it says, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. And so Bill's story is an example of what he used to be like, what happened, and what he was like now. And it's so powerful because that's the first story that people read, the first chapter after Doctor's Opinion. And that comes from Scripture too, because Paul describes what it used to be like, what happened, and what it was like now, and it was revealed to him, and I think the same thing happened to Bill W. And then we're supposed to do that in our stories, what it used to be like, what happened, what we're like now. And we're supposed to do that so people will want what we have. So how can you decide you want what we have unless you know what it used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now? And so you have to make a decision when you come to AA. Do you want what they had? And what did they have? They had they had recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body, and they had a way out on which they all agreed, remember on page 17? And they had specific directions on how they found a relationship with God. And they don't tell you that you have to do it. Notice that? Only if you want it. And if you want what they have, then if you do what they did, you'll get what they had. But if you don't do what they did, you won't get what they have. You'll get what you have. Now, a lot of people come here, and we don't really want what they have. And we don't ask them what their plan is, not because we're mean or anything, because their plan, we don't want what they have. We want them to have this. And so we feel really passionate about it. People in recovery who've recovered feel really passionate about this and want to give it away, can't help but give it away. And you're willing to go to any length to get it. Now, what does any length mean? And Mark will tell his story. It means any length. What are you not willing to do? And it means, are you willing to follow directions that aren't your own? And are you ready to take certain steps? So how do you know if you're ready to take the steps? Now, they tell you what the certain steps are in the next page. If you want what they have and are willing to go to any length, then you're ready to take the steps. And how do you decide you want what they have when you realize the hopelessness and futility of your situation and that you're powerless to change it and they have a way out and you have no way out? And so then you'll want what they have. So you see how it all ties together? And then there's an important point about the steps. It's important that you take them. Studying them and learning about them is good, but you have to take them. For instance, if you want to get to the second floor from the first floor and there are 12 steps, you have to take the steps. You can't look at the steps and say, I'm going to be on the second floor. And then you can't get to the second floor by doing 6 steps of the 12. You're still not there yet. And then you want to take the 12 steps because the 12 steps is when you have the spiritual experience or spiritual awakening, which gives you a power to say no to alcohol and a power to live. So how many steps do you need to take if you're a new person to change? You see, that's what you have to ask yourself. How many steps do you need? And then there's step zero, which I heard about from Joe Hawk. I know Jason's here, it's one of his favorite guys. He's passed away now. He was a great A speaker, brilliant guy. He said step zero is when you can see the hopelessness and futility of your condition, but you haven't done any of the steps. And then how long can you stay in that situation before you drink again? So that's why I'm anxious with new people to get them connected, get them hooked up, get them into the book, get them started moving forward as quickly as possible. Because you don't know. Remember, if you have no defense against the first drink at certain times, when is that going to occur? It could occur tonight for some of us. So we want to be always seeking the power that gives us choice. At some of these, we balked. Anybody do that? Any balkers in here? It's a baseball term, right? A balk. You make a false move or you fight it or something. You want to look up balked in here. It's not good. It means you fight it. At some of these, we balked. At many of them, we balked. Now, here's the thing. I don't know if anybody in this room has ever done this. We thought we could find an easier, softer way. We thought, now notice the problem is I'm thinking. If I'm thinking, it's a problem. Stop short of completion, tried to avoid, resisted, hesitated, balked. There is a certain resistance to this that you see in new people. I had it myself. We still have it today. We still resist certain things. And we have to watch for that. Whatever we're resisting, we need to do. I thought, who told me that? I thought I could find an easier, softer way. That's the same thinker that told me I could drink, right? That's the same thinker told me all my resentments were true, you know, and all my fears. I can't listen to my thinker anymore, and I can't find an easier, softer way. I can't find any other way. Well, what they're saying here is that if you want that they have and when you're going to get it, you're going to do this. And you do it with all the earnestness at your command, and I think that's the next line. See how it all ties together? And remember it says we reached out with the desperation of a drowning man for the flimsy reed, and then that reed became the hand of God. Page 28, I believe. And that's true, isn't it? And so we want people who are desperate as drowning men, and because then they're willing to go to any length and they're willing to follow directions. And you can see it. It says we could not. So they couldn't find an easier, softer way. Ask yourself, can you? Are you doing an easier, softer way? With all the earnestness at our command, all the conviction at their command, this is what they're begging you if you're new, to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Now, fearless means you're not going to fight anything. You're going to do it. And thorough. What does thorough mean? Thorough means thorough. It means do whatever is in front of you to do. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas. And there you go, we're thinking, hold on to our old ideas. And the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. And I wrote of what? And here's the thing. People talk about surrender in the big book. It's not written. The word surrender isn't used. But here's where they're telling you to surrender completely. And they're surrendering what? Your old ideas, your thinking, everything you think you know. Because remember, if thinking is my problem, I want to surrender everything I think I know. That's why I say the set-aside prayer. And I have old ideas come up all the time. That's why it's important that you have people you talk to. I can't tell you how many times Mark's told me to change my mind about something. I do fight it sometimes, but you have to talk to people for them to tell you, you know, you may need to relook at things. But all my old ideas is really what the ego is. It's what we're made up of. It's what we think of things, and it's our rock that we carry around. Anybody carry a rock around? all these ideas that we, and then the thing that that's supposed to be true is when you come in here, you don't really learn anything. You find out everything you're wrong about, so you can let go of it. We don't get smarter here. We unlearn all the stuff that's crap in our heads. And the result's nil until we let go absolutely of it. And so we have to completely surrender. And the thing is, you don't know what all your old ideas are, right, when you come in here. But as you see them, you surrender them. Now, you get a lot of your old ideas when you do the fourth step. That's what it's all about. You start to see your resentments, your fears. It says, remember that we deal... Oh, I wrote, my old ideas prevent me from being fearless and thorough. And my old ideas block me from God and the world of the Spirit. And how do you know when an old idea is going to come up? You never know. So you have to be willing to let go all the time. And isn't that what 6 and 7 is? And we talked about that. We spent several weeks on that. It says, remember that we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Anybody think that's true? Well, how can a liquid in a bottle be cunning, baffling, and powerful? It's in a bottle, for God's sakes. Did anybody have alcohol jump out of the bottle into their mouth? But where is it cunning, baffling, and powerful? In our minds. And our mind says, I need that. It's going to make change the way I feel. Anybody have that? And if it's going to change the way I feel, it has power over me. And I have a problem because I have an alcoholic mind. And when my mind tells me that I need to change the way I feel, I can't say no to that. Can anybody else? I can't say no to that because I can't see that it's wrong at the time I take the drink. My mind only sees what it's going to do for me, not to me. So I have no defense against the first drink. And that's why alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful, because my mind seeks the ease and comfort of what it's going to give me. And it has power over me. And if I'm a real alcoholic, which I am, I have no power to say no to that. And so how do I get a power to say no to alcohol? Well, they say, without help, it's too much for me. Anybody live that? But there is one who has all power. Here it comes. That one is God. There is one who has all power. That one is God. And so that's how we define God in AA. It's that which has all power, because there's only one thing that can have all power. So we call it God. May you find him now. And in the now, you find him. And it doesn't say to wait a while, right? It says find him right now, because you're dealing with alcohol, which is cunning, baffling, and powerful. You don't know when alcohol is going to have power over you, right? So you want to find God. And that all ties together with the other paragraphs. I'm going to stop there now. And it doesn't say, may you find him in 90 days. It doesn't say, it says find him now. And the other thing we get in AA, it's the last thing, well, I don't know if it's the last thing I'll say, I hope so. It says without help. Now here's what we get in AA. And I'll end with this. We get perfect help. If we ask for help, we get perfect help in AA. God will not let us down. We say that all the time. And Dr. Bob ends his story, your Heavenly Father will never let you down. When we ask for help and we get the help, it's perfect help. It will always work. That's why if we follow the path, we'll recover. So I'm going to end with that. I hope it was helpful. And we'll pick up with half measures. Thank you.